Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to another edition of The Winning Drive. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers, joined by fellow Lifetime Longhorn, my man CJ Vogel, and by the coach, former high school football coach at Burnet, Capel, Brownwood, Belden, Rotan, also played college football at Abilene Christian, coached there multiple stints, also was on the staff at the University of Texas for multiple head coaches in multiple stints. But now you can find his work, boom, right there, ShipleyRanches.com. It's Coach Bob Shipley. What's going on, Coach? How you doing?
Hey, doing great, man. Just getting excited about the wave. The wave of Mo keeps rolling, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, man. Coach, now you, I know you didn't go to the SEC celebration, did you? Did you go down there?
Now, why would you think I wouldn't go to something like that? You know how hip I am.
Yes, exactly. I know how hip Coach is. He just blacked out on us. All right, Coach will be back. But CJ was actually down there, so we'll get some of CJ's thoughts about what went down yesterday with the SEC extravaganza. Texas had a big commit today. We'll get that. We'll get CJ's thoughts about Smith Orogbo. I actually got a chance to watch this young man too, so I'll give you my thoughts about the latest commitment for the Longhorns on the edge. My man CJ had a really interesting tweet about that too. I want to get to that. Also, I got a question for the panel as it relates to Texas baseball now and Texas football, because I believe it, CDC yesterday on one of the panels where he's being interviewed, he said that Texas is a football and a baseball school, which I don't disagree with that, by the way. I'm sure Coach Terry probably had a little something to say about that and some other coaches. But he said it was a football and a baseball school, so I want to ask you guys, between the football and the baseball program, which one will win a national title first? That's the question I'll throw out there, between the baseball and the football program. All right, we'll get into that coming up a little bit later on. Also, Open Doors, which is probably the premier company that covers NIL transactions around the country, collectives, directives, you know what I'm saying? They do a really good job of it, and they've been probably on the cutting edge of it since the inception, since the genesis of NIL, and they have put out their projections for NIL, and they put out some of their numbers for this past year's NIL market. And I think they're really interesting. I want to share those, get coaches' thoughts about that and the new NIL era that we live in, and talk about some of this straight cash, homie, these young kids are making. So we'll get into that too coming up a little bit later on. But first, I want to start with the big news close to home, CJ.
Yeah.
And that is the commitment of one Smith Orogbo. I'm going to get coaches' thoughts about this young man too, because we all got a chance to watch a little film on him. But the latest commitment for the Longhorns, Smith Orogbo, out of H-Town, right? A-Leaf Hastings, I believe. Give me your initial thoughts and tell us a little bit about the recruiting process for this young man and how it worked out for Texas.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, pretty big win for the Longhorns, right? And comes at a time where I think Texas fans were looking to grasp on to any type of success or news that kind of fell their way on the recruiting trail. And it's a big one. I'm a big fan of Smith Orogbo. I really like what he projects to at the next level. Of course, right now he's 6'4", 220, 225. So plenty of room to grow into that defensive end, kind of position, that body, that frame. But his tape, and Rod, you've seen it. Coach, I'd love to get your thoughts as well. But his first step, that ball get off that he has, is elite. And I think you see the twitchiness, the way that he kind of gets around the edge at times, the way that he kind of eludes defenders. That's going to be the next step for him in his development, is adding pass rushing moves to his repertoire. Right now, it's a lot of that speed. It's a lot of that I'm just going to blow by you kind of acceleration that he has in his game, which is one, really exciting, because you expect that to maintain a big part of his game. But two, when you compare that with the, you know, kind of fine tuning of the technical aspect of rushing the passer and fighting through the hands and kind of disengaging with offensive linemen and different varieties, it really projects well for the Longhorns. And I put this up on Twitter earlier. We know what Texas needs to recruit when it comes to competing in the SEC. It's the trenches. It's on the offensive line, quarterback offensively. But defensively, it's defensive tackle and it's the edge rushers. And we've talked about it. They've revamped this edge room going into 2024. But in the last two cycles, they've done a tremendous job of accumulating that big talent on the edges, whether it be a Colin Simmons, a five-star guy last year, Zena Umeozula already up to about 255, 260, 6'5", 6'6", lengthy guy. But now you look in this 2025 cycle. Lance Jackson, we've talked about it, national top 50 prospect, could end up being a five-star caliber guy. Robo, right outside of that top 100 right now nationally. But again, a guy that Texas was able to fight off Texas Tech and Oklahoma for and secure a commitment. It was a really impressive showing for the Longhorns, even with Smith only taking his official visit by himself. No family members were on campus with them. Texas wowed him enough for 2 weeks later. He says, I've seen enough. I'm excited for this, my next chapter. I'm going to commit to the University of Texas, and that's going to be my decision moving forward.
Yeah, Coach, did you get a chance to watch any of this young man's video and film? Because it is really impressive. I mean, honestly, CJ, he's 220 now, and I'm not saying this to make the comparison, but when you watch him 6'4", 220, he looks almost skinny.
Yeah.
With that frame. And I remember another guy just came out of DB High in H-Town. Brian Arakpo was about 6'4", 220 when he came out. I mean, it was almost – he's almost a very similar frame and turn. That guy packed on about 37 pounds, somewhere like that, 35 pounds, something like that at Texas. I'm just saying the frame, he can easily pack on 25, 30 pounds, Coach. And he would still keep his – explosivity. He would still keep his short area quickness and change of direction. And that's why I think Texas likes him so much, man. The upside is tremendous with him.
Yeah, he's got a first step like a little bit like J.J. Watt. They're not built the same, but just that I love the way CJ put that, because when you watch his film, that's the first thing that I noticed too about every player, how quick they are off the ball. But man, you're talking about room for growth, man. He has got an unbelievable future ahead of him, and the potential is who knows what he'll be able to turn into. But he definitely fits the. You know, he reminds me body style. He's going to wind up being what's the freak we had back? I think after you already left, Rod, he was from Dallas, Woodrow Wilson.
Oh, Sergio.
Sergio Kendall, man.
Sergio Kendall. He was like that too. You're right, Coach. He was about 6'4", 225. He was around that same range when he came
and
in.
Man, by the time, yeah, by yeah. the time he finished developing, he looked like a Greek god, man. I mean, just a man among boys.
Yeah. Yeah, just a menace. No, and you're right. My notes on them, I wrote down in my notes. Literally, my first thing I wrote down was powerful and quick first step off the ball. Often resets at the line of scrimmage. He has an impressive way of redistributing his weight as a pass rusher. That's really impressive. Allows him to change direction really well. And I think he actually may be just as impressive against the run. I think he's a little underrated against the run. I love what he did against the run. So, like I said, he's raw because he's got no pass rushing moves. He's just got a quick first step. And he's got a motor, too. You'll see him make some plays with his motor as well as his athletic ability. So, I think Texas should be. And CJ, you pointed this out. I want to say we were talking during the spring, during those open windows for the media. And I think we asked you, all right, hey, just first impressions. You're walking, you're seeing the team for the first time. You know, what stands out? What group stands out to you? And I remember you said the edges. And you said because of the size, the whole group, like everybody now in that unit looks big. You said Trey Moore was kind of the one that stood out because he wasn't as big as the rest of that group.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny. I remember that first week of practice and availabilities for the media, walking down and seeing these edges work together. It did look like Trey Moore was, and I don't want to put it in a negative way, but he looked like he was the runt of the litter, right? He's only about 6'2 and a half, maybe 6'3 on a good day. But when you got guys like Colton Vosick at 6'6, you've got guys, Zena Umiozulu, another one. But we know Ethan Burke is a big dude. Baron Sorrell, while maybe not the tallest guy, he's built like a house with the way that he's, you know, kind of developed his body in the weight room. Trey Moore is not built that way. But again, you turn on the tape and you see the production from a year ago. That first step, that BGO that we continue to talk about, it stands out when you watch him on tape. You see it with Colin Simmons as well. They're more so built similarly. I think Colin has a little bit longer arms than Trey Moore, but at the end of the day, I mean, this room has continued to change and kind of evolve into what you expect an SEC defensive end room to look like. Yep. And for Texas fans, that should be very encouraging because we've talked about it all offseason, Rod and Coach. I mean, this is a position that can make or break games at times. You know, you want to go back to what Texas Tech, Oklahoma State was it 2019 maybe when it was Charles Omenihu with six sacks or something like that. Like he took over that game and allowed Texas to come away with a victory in which Oklahoma State probably was the better team at the time. So when you have a guy like that that can dominate one side of the ball on the defensive end spot, it's huge. And I think Texas is moving closer and closer right now to getting those type of guys ready to go for the SEC.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. They're stockpiling in that room. Like you said, doing a great job in recruiting. And right now, we expect that group to be a strength. And Sark has even talked about how he's expecting really, you know, big things out of that defensive end, that edge room coming up this season. All right, a couple other things I want to get to. I want to talk about Paul Feinbaum. And we remember this quote from yesterday. Coach, I'm sure you saw it. Paul Feinbaum was asked about who he thinks is going to be the starting quarterback by the end of the season. And he said, there's no tiptoeing around it. It'll be Arch Manning. But he has now walked that back a little bit. He said he wanted to clarify. All right. He's like he wanted to clarify a day later. Because he said he's been asked about it. And the quote blew up. Because everybody thought Paul Feinbaum was predicting that Arch Manning was going to end up being the starting quarterback by the end of the season. And he said, quote, I may be feeble, but I'm not that feeble. He said this on TC Now. He said, when the guy said end of the season, I thought he meant end of the season. I don't want to back away from anything I said, but I did give an interview earlier to a young man with the local TV. I've been seeing that pop up, and I'm going, what was I drinking? I'm glad that you gave me a chance to clarify because I really was thinking end of season, he's going to be the starter next year. And I said, guaranteed, mark it down. I would never impugn Hewers because I think he's probably the second best quarterback in the country starting the year. Okay, so there you go. For all those who thought he was just trying. And I always say he's like an SEC promoter. He's basically like the Don King of the SEC. So it kind of fit that he had that in his holster ready to go. But he did say, Coach, he wasn't trying to start nothing. He believes Quinn is going to be the starting quarterback. Next year will be Arch Madness.
Well, it sounds like he has spent some time in Washington, D.C., the way he's backing back off of that statement. Because honestly, when I first saw that, I thought that he was referring to the fact that the SEC is, in general, a very it's a tough league. Yeah. I mean, it's a very physical league, and that it'd be, you know, knowing Quinn's history, he might not be able to make it through the entire season healthy. And so that was the first thing that I thought of when I saw that. But then I don't think that's what he meant. So most of us red blood Americans would say, football fans would say, I guarantee you that Archie will be the quarterback the next season. We wouldn't say at the end of the season. We would say next season.
Yeah, I agree.
You don't have to walk that statement back.
It was weird the way I was like, if you're going to say it like that, it's still weird to say that. I think most people would say the next season, like you said, Coach, but I know Longhorn fans got a little riled up over that. So just throwing it out there, he did clarify that he meant 2025. You'll get your Arch Madness, but this is Quinn Ewers' year. But you're right, Coach. Honestly, just for the sake of discussion, let's have the discussion. If there's any probable way that Arch Manning would end up being a starter at the end of the year, it would be because Quinn got hurt. I'm knocking on wood here. Quinn got hurt. Quinn has not had any games where he's totally spiraled. Maybe Oklahoma State a couple of years ago at Oklahoma State where he spirals out of control and that's the reason you lose a game. If he has a bad series or a bad, you know, quarter like we see in the Oklahoma game to start off, that's usually about it for Quinn. And he bounces back pretty well. And I think we expect him this year to actually have his best season so far. But the injury history of Quinn is a concern for NFL scouts. And they've talked about it. And I think the last time he had a season where he went injury free, start to finish, was sophomore year of high school, something like that. So, and they're not things that are season ending injuries for him, but there are injuries that take him out of, you know, the game and not out for some time, maybe a game or two. And I do wonder, based on that history, and then based on Texas history, hell, last 25 years, how often has Texas had a quarterback start every game, an entire season, start to finish? Like 7 times in the last 25 years?
Yeah, it's not been awesome.
Yeah, Arch is going to play. Arch is, history would tell you that Arch will play. The history of Quinn and the history of Texas football says Arch is going to play critical, crucial snaps this year. We just don't know when and how it's going to happen. We hope that's not the case. I'm hoping that Quinn has that season where he obviously is durable enough to make it through the entire year. And one of the exceptions to the rule recently here at Texas where, hey, he, like Sam did, was that 2019 for Sam? He played every game and started every game. 02 for Sims, he did that. But, you know, it didn't happen a lot. You know, that's VY in 05. You know, Colt did it 08, but not in 09. I mean, it's hard to do it from start to finish, especially with the season getting longer. You're going to need Arch. There ain't no doubt.
Sam probably did that with 20 rushing attempts each game, too. So,
yes,
yeah, true. Bam, have the benefit of what we're looking at on an offensive line this year. So, luckily for Quinn, that should be a reason to help keep him on the field this year. But, you know, having gotten to see both of these guys throw a little bit this past week in Thibodaux, Louisiana for the Manning Passing Academy, I mean, both guys look great. I thought Quinn was the top arm there. Him and Carson Beck were probably my 1-2. But again, I think Quinn's kind of built and kind of caters to those on-air situations a little bit better than most quarterbacks. The arm talent that you see is second to none, especially in that 20-yard in range. I mean, very rarely do you see him off the mark. And so for Arch, and again, what we saw in the spring game, it should be a little bit of a precursor for what we could see in a live action game. Maybe not 355 yards and, you know, the highlight reel plays that we saw all throughout that day, but certainly enough to get Texas down the field and in positions to put points on the board if Arch is that guy at some point this year.
Yeah. I hope it doesn't happen, but history would tell you that there's a good chance of it happening at some point. Texas will need Arch to step up. All right, getting back to this is another Paul Feinbaum quote. And this is actually one that I actually agree with. but he said, and it's something I've said, when they asked him what the game of the year is going to be in the SEC, he did say it's going to be Texas A&M. He said when he was asked about the biggest games in the SEC, he said the game of the year is at Kyle Field on Thanksgiving weekend. That atmosphere will rival anything that we see the rest of the season. I've been saying it for a while. This season, Coach, this season, it feels bigger than Texas OU. Only this year. I don't think it'll be that case after that. And before that, of course, Texas OU is always bigger. This year, it does feel a little different. Coach Schloss and what just happened between Texas baseball and Texas and baseball is probably sprinkled a little bit on more angst on that because that'll bleed over into football. But it, you know, I mean, it feels like it to me, it's going to be bigger. And I don't know, Feinbaum agrees that it might be bigger this year, too.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, I don't know what, you know, I know there's some great rivalries in the SEC, and we've had great rivalries before, whether it be with OU, Arkansas, whatever. But, and that's a game that, you know, I've said this many times. You know, I circle that one as a game that gives me the most sleepless nights, you know, because it is there's not a must-win game. But if you look at the Aggie culture and you look at what's going on in the history and where we're both at right now, we just took their baseball coach, which was the best hire they've had in decades probably, and we took them away. If they lose to us at Kyle Field, first year of the SEC, it's going to be it's going to be a major setback for Texas A&M. What's on the line, it will have somewhat of a redemption factor if they can beat us, that they are still who they think they are. And again, everything cycles. I mean, this just we're in a good role right now, just like they were in a good role with Johnny Manziel, you know, going to the SEC. That's where we are. We're in a good role with our team right now. Everything cycles, but it's just fun to savor what's going on right now and take it in. Man. almost daily, you know, certainly weekly, taking it all in. But that's a game that they will pull out every stop and they will do everything within their power to win. And obviously we will too. I just hope that our guys go down there, especially our new guys. Well, nobody on this team obviously has played Texas A&M mm-hmm. unless it's a transfer, you know, but they've never played in the Texas A&M game.
No.
So, you know, Rod, you played. People tried to tell you what the Texas OU game was like. People tried to tell you what Kyle Field was like, but they can't tell you, especially in your day, Texas OU. There's no words that can, in my mind, prepare you for what that game is really like. I mean, you have to experience it. Am I right? I never got to experience it as a player, but I certainly experienced it many times as a staff member, and it's crazy. And the A&M game will be that on steroids.
Yeah, no, it will be, especially this year. Will be no question about that. All right, let's get to a couple of questions. Then we'll get to our fantastic sponsor for the winning drive today. How about this one from Anish Singh? Thank you very much, Anish. Do y'all believe Texas would prefer to have Jonathan Cunningham or Madden Faramo as their third linebacker with Riley and Elijah? CJ, I'll throw it to you. I don't know. I like the kid. Is it Farayamo?
Yeah. Yeah.
I like him. I've seen him. You guys see me his film. He's nice, man. I think
that kid's one of the top linebackers in the country. I think Madden Faramo, with where Texas came out of his official visit, it was looking more like Notre Dame. Texas kind of closed that gap a little bit moving forward. It's going to be Texas and Notre Dame. Who knows if USC is going to be a player here or not? Right now, I lean no. To the question, to be the third linebacker in the class, well, you're going to have to land Riley Pettijohn beforehand. And right now, I don't know where things sit with Riley Pettijohn. I think it's a true four-team race. Texas A&M, Ohio State, USC. 2 weeks ago, I heard a lot of buzz about Texas A&M and Ohio State. Today, I'm hearing a lot of buzz about USC. So who knows? Who knows? He feels like he's all over the place. He'll be announcing this Saturday. So a decision is coming soon for Riley Pettijohn. Right now, I can't say that I lean one way or the other with Texas. This morning I put up that there are some factors that lead me to think that Texas will be at least heavily considered, and I believe that they are behind the scenes. As the days progress, I kind of sit back and think, I don't know if Texas is going to be in that first or second spot for Riley Pettijohn. I think it's just too cloudy up at the top. But what does that mean moving forward? I think, again, Madden Faramo is a tremendous option at the linebacker spot, as is Jonathan Cunningham, who also will be deciding here soon. But right now, Madden Faramo is that guy I would put all of my chips in the basket for and say, that's our next guy at linebacker.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. He stands out. I don't know if I'm making the choice, but he's the one that I think might be someone is something special and unique about his skill set.
Yeah, he's got it here, Rod. That's the other thing. Having talked to him a little bit, kind of getting an understanding of what he is as a prospect and a player. I mean, that's a guy that will absolutely have a green dot at some point in his college career. He will be the guy that gets the call from the sideline, directs it across his defense and says, let's play some ball. He's brilliant up between the ears, and that talent shows up on the field as well.
It does show. No, I agree with you. And so Arch Mania says, is Faramo really interested in Texas? Isn't he the one that had the quote that you had, CJ, that you posted on Texas Football that – you know, how do you not consider Texas? I believe I'm paraphrasing, but wasn't it something?
Yeah, if you're a football player, how do you not choose Texas was the quote, basically. And, I mean, that's a hell of a quote for a guy that's only been to campus twice from the West Coast.
Yeah.
Texas made a strong impression there.
Yeah, I like that. Good stuff, CJ. I like that. All right. You know, we'll get back to another question here, but first, let's thank our fantastic sponsor. Very happy to have our friends over at South Point, a part of the Owen, Texas football team. And we appreciate them being part of our Owen, Texas football community and sponsoring the winning drive. So, Texas football fans, you can score an easy point this season when you get to the point at South Point Dodge. South Point Dodge has over 600 vehicles in stock, ladies and gentlemen, including a great selection of Ram 1500s. 2500s and 3500s, whatever your truck needs, South Point Dodge is the one-stop shop. So score big today at South Point Dodge. You can go see them in person off I-35 in South Austin, or go visit them online today at southpointdodge.com. You can go get South Point Dodge's best offer on all of their great new trucks, including those 50 Ram 2500s, all marked down with huge savings, folks. South Point Dodge is always stocked with a great selection, and you can go check that out today online at southpointdodge.com, or go see them in person off I-35 in South Austin at South Point Dodge. Thank you very much for our sponsoring the winning drive, and we appreciate them being a part of the Owen, Texas football family. All right, let's get back to a couple of topics here. We'll get back to some of the questions. Please throw out the questions. We'll answer as many of them as we can. Of course, super chats, jump to the front of the line. You can interrupt the show at any time. You know how that goes. All right. Here's the topic. I threw this out there earlier. It's just a random debate topic or a conversation starter. I heard CDC during the SEC celebration say Texas is a football and a baseball school. And hard to argue with that. I mean, you just stole away your rival's baseball coach right after they played in a national championship series. Hey, man, you're a baseball school. You take it very seriously. We know how seriously they take football. Hey, the channel is called On Texas Football. So considering the University of Texas, with all their resources, consider themselves a baseball and a football school, and now both have, really good coaches, right? Great coaches, potentially championship caliber coaches. Which one will win the national title first? Oof. Schloss or Sark?
Easy.
Easy?
Easy, Sark.
Oh, easy. I like it. All right, give me the reason. Give it to me. Why Sark over Schloss?
Because he already has so many pieces of the puzzle together.
Already done, huh?
And he's already proven that he can win with the guys that we have. And not only that, he is, in my mind, continually improving our roster.
So why not change the question in? Because that's unfair. So I'll just say then, who's going to win it in a shorter time span? Because it'll take next year, there'll be five. So who's it take longer to win a national title? Who wins it in a shorter time span? Who wins it sooner? Obviously, who's going to win it? Obviously, right, Sark has already built it. But who wins it in a shorter time span?
Well, CJ, what do you think, man?
Listen, Sarkisian's gotten this thing so close, right? Year three, you were a top four program. You're going into the SEC, so it's going to be a little bit more challenging. I do think the expanded playoffs adds another, level of difficulty, if you will, to winning in the world of college football. I will still lean Texas football just because I think that they're a little bit more advanced with where things are in the recruiting world, right? Texas baseball is certainly getting there, and I think that this hiring of Jim Schlossnagel is going to unlock some doors that were previously locked shut when it comes to the portal, NIL, some of the back channeling when it comes to getting the funding right for fielding a team. That will help. I just think Texas had that from the offset with Steve Sarkisian when he was hired. They said, go on out, get all the big guys that you can, revamp this offensive line, get this team looking like it should be going into the SEC. I thought he did a tremendous job. Listen, if Sarkisian wins it this year or even next year, I think to expect a championship under Jim Schlossnagel within 3 years would be a pretty tall tale. I know he just did so at A&M. He competed for it, but he didn't win it. Winning it, getting over that hump is a different story. And I think, again, with the way that things kind of shape up right now, I mean, Sarkisian gets that nod with what he's done so far through 3 years. I'd like to see how this roster looks going into year one before giving that judgment for year 2, 3, and 4 with Jim Schlossnagel.
Yeah. No, okay. It is. Go ahead. Okay. Go ahead, CJ.
I wanted to add, Texas actually just added, right as we got on the channel this afternoon, Rod, they just added a pitcher out of the portal this afternoon. Let me find his name right quick. Thomas Burns, a right-handed pitcher from Arizona State, was a pitcher this past season. Started 6 games, had a 4.75 ERA, so maybe not, you know, a top-end guy, but certainly a midweek rotation pitcher for Jim Schlossnagel, Max Weiner as well, moving into the SEC year one. This is a guy that you can expect to develop under the arm for arm and the new Texas coaching staff here. So pretty impressive addition there. Texas now up to 4 portal additions since the announcement of Jim Schlossnagel to Texas.
All right, you know, good stuff. Yeah, and it's tough not to say football, but man, what Schloss did with A&M getting them to a championship, their first championship competition, a major sport since what, 1939. I mean, man, the man can coach his butt off, and he'll have all those resources and more here at the University of Texas. And you know, Texas baseball is more of a blue blood than Texas football is.
I hope he's recruiting tough-minded kids, and I'm sure he is, because all the interviews I've been seeing of former players, that dude don't mess around.
No, he don't.
He does not mess around. It's his way or the highway, baby. And I love that. I love those tough-minded players in the dining hall.
Yeah.
You know, I love them in the dorm. I love them around. You know, I mean, you know, tough-minded players. You know, that's what happened in that running back room, Rod. With the whole culture of our football team, in my opinion, started in that running back room, you know, and it just bled over onto the team, and they started recruiting guys like that, and obviously our baseball coaches, he's hard nosed. I mean, I'm sure he loves them up too. You have to in these days, but he's going to have a better chance because he knows how to build the foundation the right way. The team is not built around what the players want to do. It's built around a strategic foundation that he sets and he does not vary off of, sounds like to me.
Coach, there's a story about Jim Schlossnagel from his time at TCU that was shared on Twitter the other day. It was Jake Arrieta, who has had a tremendous career in the major leagues over the last decade plus. He most famously with the Cubs helped win a World Series. But he told a story about how TCU's season ended a bit short and maybe not to the expectation that they had set for themselves going into, you know, the regular season, the postseason, whatever. Schlossnagel took Jake Arrieta and another pitcher out to center field. And he said, today's what, June 2nd, 2023. And I want you guys to write this date into your cap for the next year. Hmm. And every time you put that hat on, remember what it took for y'all to get there and fall flat and make sure that you don't ever come back to feeling like this again. And, you know, TCU certainly didn't win a national championship in baseball, but 4 straight at one point World Series title appearances for TCU was something that they had never done. All of their College World Series appearances came under Jim Schlossnagel. So that last paragraph right there. Coach demands excellence. He expects discipline and knows how to turn boys into men. This is why he was chosen to run the premier program in all of college baseball. He's talking about Texas. This is a guy that hated Texas, right? Competing at TCU, understanding what it's like to view Texas as, you know, there was a kid that was expected to commit to Texas that backed off of that commitment, ended up sticking with a previously announced commitment elsewhere. He told me right now, listen, if this visit goes well to Texas that I'm expected to take, there's no way I don't end up here. He told me straight up, quote, Texas is the Yankees of college baseball. And so for that to be how a lot of these kids view the Longhorns, I think that they're certainly going to have an upper edge when it comes to recruiting. And, of course, now that this coaching staff is in place, that development will get them over the hump. And so it's been funny over the last week or two since Texas made the hire that – shift has changed, Coach, and from, you know, this is our coach of the future, he'll never leave Texas A&M, to, well, he was an asshole. You know, this guy, he's hard-nosed, no one liked him, he was tough to get along with. He's not your brother, he's not your best friend. This is the guy that's supposed to get you where you want to go. Yeah. It's insane how the narrative has switched from being the best coach in baseball to, oh, we're glad he's gone. Kids didn't like him. They couldn't be buddy-buddy with him. That's not his job.
Yeah. Okay, CJ, I want one more, just one more thing on that topic. Do you think the hiring back of the A&M assistant is going to keep some of those Aggies at home and not and out of the portal?
Yeah, it absolutely will. And for Texas A&M this year and probably 2025, I think it's a great move. But, and Rod, I'll let you fill in, you know, the size of the butt here, right? But, again, this is a guy without any true head coaching experience. He's not been in charge of going out and filling a recruiting class. He's not been the guy in the dugout where every decision, every pitching change, every bunt, hit and run, steal, whatever, it has fallen on him. That's – if you're a Texas fan, I think you have to sit back and say, all right, yeah, we'll take this trade. You get your guy. You keep your team for a year or two. But we got the head guy. We got Jim Schlossnagel. We don't know what your guy can do yet. If he turns out to be a fine coach, that's fine. But you don't have Tony Vitello. You don't have the DBU coach, Heifner, that's put together a tremendous program up there. This is not the guys that you had 1, 2, 3, 4, or even 5 on your list right now when it came to making your baseball hire. So, sure, you added your fine piece right now. But Texas fans should be looking back saying, yeah, I love where things – fell right now. They can keep their team in place. They got a lot of talent, sure. But long-term, is that the guy that gets you over the hump? I'm not sure. It feels very reminiscent to what Texas Tech did when Texas originally took Chris Beard. And they said, hold on. Actually, and again, this is how the storylines and narratives change once the head coach departs, coach. But it was actually the head assistant that was making all the calls and drawing up all the sets and making sure that the substitutions are going in place. We saw how that worked out. Mm-hmm. The cactus emojis were calling for his head after 2 years.
Thing. And that's the same thing you're hearing from College Station now. This was a recruiter. This is the one that got all the guys here. You know, he was the main cog that got us where we were. Yeah, it's just been and again, it's election time. That's all we hear is stories being spun left and right. You know, daily. We just accept them as a, you know, we don't make anybody I don't know if we're like Dion keeping receipts on all that stuff.
Exactly.
Oh man. Yeah. I coached with the election reference already. I gotta tell you, I don't know if y'all watched the debate, but it's gonna be a very interesting election. We all know that. all right, let's get back to some Texas topics here. Hey CJ, I want to ask you about this because I heard Bobby and Jerry talking about this, and I've obviously noticed some Longhorn fans talking about it too. Some of the I don't know if you call them L's, but basically how Texas right now is finishing second in some of these recruitments. Right. Some of the interior D linemen, the big D tackles from around the country, big D linemen, Josiah Sharma being one of these guys, right? Myron Charles being one of these guys. Like there are several guys that Longhorn fans are a little bit they are pessimistic. And where Texas stands in these particular recruitments at this specific position, do you think what is happening in your opinion at in terms of the D tackle recruitments that Texas is trying to get on a national stage?
Yeah, I think starting with that last sentence there, Rod, they're recruiting on a national stage. You know, they understand that to have great success in the SEC, you got to have those big bodies on the interior. That's why the portal was so important this offseason. Well, they want to build that more from the high school ranks, and who could blame them, right? Getting them into the fold, getting that development, you know, kind of molding them for 3 years rather than one offseason to be the players that they want them to be. That's the plan. But when you pursue guys from California, Georgia, Florida again, you know, it's a tougher sell than kids that were born in Dallas or Houston or somewhere, you know, off the beaten track, you know, up near coach, right? You know, it's a little bit different when you have to lure them away from their hometown teams where probably their family were fans of them growing up, or it's a significantly, you know, tougher task to say, uproot everything and trust us here at Texas, especially with, and this is to no fault of Kenny Baker's, but this is his first year coaching at a level like the SEC to go out and recruit when you don't maybe have that one guy playing in the NFL that you could point to and say, yeah, that's because of me. I was the guy that molded him and developed him that way. You don't have that. What you do have is competitors all being able to say the same thing. So it's not the fault of Kenny Baker's. That's not what I mean to say. But in this current cycle where the top prospects are right now, it's certainly elevated, you know, kind of that task and that challenge that Texas is facing on the interior line. And the other thing I'll say is, you know, we just turned the calendar to July. Coach Rod has – we've talked about it. There's been a number of rules changed and implemented in college football. They didn't add a new signing day. You know, that was one of them. So these recruitments, although committed elsewhere, they still have a long way to go before pen meets pad. And we've seen Texas time and time again come in and find ways to, whether it be on the field or through the world of recruiting, pull apart some of these recruitments elsewhere, whether it be Anthony Hill. You know, Colin Simmons was one that was going to LSU's direction. Terrence Brooks was a big one at the end. A number of Xavier Filsomi, Wardell Mack. I mean, they've had great success flipping in the end. I'm looking at it like that's going to be the success for this interior defensive line again in 2025. It'll just come later in the year.
Yeah. I think a lot of Longhorn fans are it's basically – it's multifactorial. There are multiple things, I think, leading up to their kind of pessimism about these recruitments, national recruitments of these blue-chip defensive tackles, because Bo Davis left, hiring Kenny Baker. Kenny Baker's resume, obviously not nowhere close as you know, illustrious as Bo Davis's resume yet, because he's still a young up-and-coming coach. And then you lose Sweat and you lose Murphy. And even Sark was, I think, saying in the offseason multiple times, I think, in multiple interviews, that the thing he was most concerned about was the interior D-line, the big bodies. Remember after the spring game, he almost had a call to arms, if you will, like, hey, we need more big humans on the inside and the interior D-line. So I think now there's almost a sense of urgency and anxiety among Longhorn fans about the interior D-line, period, including the recruiting of some of those guys for the future. So we'll see. I mean, if it works out this year with Kenny Baker, with Lole and Savea and the guys they brought in, Bill Norton, I do think they'll be able to somehow, I think it'll help recruiting as well. But it, you know, we'll see. Right now, I think ultimately recruiting and how that position is going to perform on the field has probably got Longhorn fans somewhat anxious. That's all.
Yeah, I would say our performance in our first year of the SEC, if they meet what people are predicting, then, yeah, we're going to steal some guys. We're going to flip some guys. If it doesn't meet the wave, the momentum wave we're on right now, if it does not meet the expectation of what a lot of people are saying, then it's going to be a lot tougher to flip those guys. I'm not saying you can't, but it will be a lot tougher. But if we go in and we beat Georgia at DKR, we beat A&M at College Station, you know, we take care of business, you know, and in the other big games we have, OU, and, you know, we're going to flip some guys. I don't think there's any doubt, because we will be the topic of conversation in college football this fall. If we stumble, then we're going to have to really make up some ground some other way, apparently. And maybe that's through the NIL. I don't know.
No, it's a good point. No, you're right about that, Coach. All right, let me ask you this, CJ, because you were at the SEC celebration. Do you think it felt like there were as many people there as on a game day? So we're talking about, what do you think the attendance was? I don't know if they're going to release an attendance for the SEC celebration, but people told me it felt like a game day. It certainly looked like it was that many people out there. So what are we talking, 100,000, 150,000, 200,000? What
do you know? I wouldn't say that big, Rod. But listen, I thought they had a great turnout. And, I mean, it was a hot day. It's the last day of June, you know, middle of the afternoon going all the way into the night. They had a great turnout. All afternoon, you know, they had the SEC house up there. Coaches were signing autographs. They had the ESPN stage, whether it be Feinbaum or Marty Davis or Marty Smith or Laura Rutledge. I mean, these guys were all paraded around the city of Austin, getting an idea of what it was like to experience a game day, quote unquote, in Austin. Yeah. I told Coach earlier they had their own Beville Boulevard up there with, you know, face painting. They had the slides, the rock climbing wall. It was a cool deal. So I thought Texas really, really did a great job of making this into a celebration more than an event, You know, and again, when Texas is tasked with, you know, these kind of special afternoons, they do a great job. CDC, his staff, the events department, they make it feel like there's something worth celebrating, and it capping that off, obviously, with the pit bull and the fireworks were, I mean, it was a great touch. Coach, if you were out there, I mean, would you have stuck around for pit bull? People were asking yesterday.
I've heard pit bulls are dangerous, man, so I don't know that I would have been around. Oh, he's a rapper. Oh, yeah,
he's singing the song.
Mr. Worldwide.
No, I'm just kidding.
Mr. Worldwide.
Hey, as old as I am, I couldn't have handled the heat, man. I would not been able to handle the heat. I'm surprised there weren't more heat-related emergencies out there. I know there was one person that went to the hospital with non-life-threatening, and a couple of others went for – and it could have been heat-related. I don't know, but
it was hot.
I'm just glad nobody did something stupid, you know? I mean, you never know in a situation like that. It's just all somebody has to do is yell, gun, you know, and then you've got mass hysteria. You know, I'm just glad – I was just hoping everything would go smooth and wouldn't be anything that anybody could pull negatively out of it. Now, reading all the memes the last couple of days about and all the edited videos about, you know, SEC welcoming Texas in, you know, and all that stuff. I still say the best one of all time was when who was it? Who was the video where he comes in and A&M sitting on the bench and he's rubbing his hair and what was that actor's name?
What movie was it?
No, I didn't even see the movie, but it's the greatest video edit of all time. Right when they announced Texas going to the SEC, and he comes and he's high fiving everybody.
Oh, it's from the American Hustle.
American Hustle.
I know you're talking about that. Yes,
laughing my head off, man.
No, that is a great video.
He gives him a noogie, you know.
Yes, no, it's Bradley Cooper, right?
That's it.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. That is a great video, and it's timeless now. It's timeless. Now they bring it out anytime there's a Texas A&M dispute. They should break it out. It's great. I'm with you on that one, Coach. That was awesome. Okay, so we'll answer some of your
questions. Here we go. If you have not seen this, folks, you need to pull it up.
It's a legendary. I mean, 100%.
You're like, oh, boy.
Yeah, it's an all-time great. It's an all-time great edit. It really is. I mean, it is.
Oh, it is.
Amazing.
It is. Yeah, you and us, me, we're doing big things. We're going places.
Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah, it's great. It's good.
This was one that anytime I see it on the timeline, it's laughs. Watch all the way through.
I watch it every single time just because
oh man.
He starts humping him.
It is fantastic. Yeah. It's good. it's so well known that Coach doesn't even know the movie. He just described it. And I think we all were like, oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. I got it. Oh, man. All right. Good stuff. Okay. Before we get to, I got one more of the topic. Actually, I got two more of the topics before we get out of here. Let's answer some of these questions, and then we'll get to those topics, though. This is coming from Daniel Clark. He says, on that note, I'm assuming he was talking to the note we were just talking about, D tackles. Any word on Mitchell's development? Are we just talking about Sadir Mitchell, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
Last time I heard, I mean, obviously, they brought in three D tackles via the transfer portal. So that's the biggest hint that I have. They're not necessarily confident in Sadir Mitchell's development right now. What are your thoughts, CJ?
Yeah, I actually saw him a little bit last night. Again, the big question there is he to a weight where you can expect him to play, you know, extended drives, possessions? I don't know. I'm eagerly counting down the days until we see that updated Texas roster into the fall, because we saw him. I thought he played well in the spring game. I thought he, at least towards the end of May, had slimmed down about 15, 20 pounds maybe. He was down to about 350, 355. I'm not sure if he's still in that area right now. So that continues to give me pause until I see it on the field, until I see it in writing that he's no longer sitting north of 365. that's really where my hesitancies come with him. Of course, I do expect him to be somewhat in the rotation this year. I think he's just too talented of a football player to not be. But how much will you see him? I think that's the big question. And right now, with all these bodies coming in, I can't sit right here and say that I expect to see him a whole lot right now.
Hey, Coach, it's so strange how some guys can carry that weight. Like, we talked about Trevontre Sweat last year, and they said he played – like, this guy was playing 360, 370 maybe, even some people even said. And yet, man, he was playing out there light on his feet. Looked like he was a guy playing like he was 350, played the best football of his career. And at the NFL level, they're going to want him to lose a little bit of that weight because he's the heaviest D-tackle in the league. But – is Sidir Mitchell not the same? He doesn't carry it as well as a guy like Devondre Sweat did. And I like this, the point that CJ brought up, that you got to kind of go all the way back to Devondre Sweat's initial recruitment and development and go look at how, what weight he was when he was being recruited. And he almost kind of added weight to an athletic frame as opposed to Sidir Mitchell, who just may be built differently as a, just a big, huge human being. And it's just that how you acquired that mass was a little bit different.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, I can weigh 250 and I can stand next to another guy weighing 250 and it's a whole different DNA, you know. But I really think our staff, especially our strength staff, they'll have him in the best shape he can possibly be in. They ain't going to let him come in 20 pounds overweight. They're going to have him on a diet. They have all kinds of dietitians up there. They're taking care of him. They're watching every meal that they're eating. And I think he'll be in as good a physical shape as he can possibly be. But, I mean, he has to. If he wants to play, he has to. He doesn't have a choice. He can't come in and play himself into shape. You can't do that anymore. You know, you've got to come in shape. And I just don't know genetically. I think Sweat was a freak. I just think he's one of those guys comes around, you know, very rarely that can handle it and carry it the way that he did. What was the defensive tackle in, that played for years in the NFL? Reggie, was it Green Bay?
Oh, yeah, the big one. You're right. Was it Gilbert? No.
Reggie.
Not Reggie White, is it?
Reggie White, yeah.
Oh, Reggie? Okay, Reggie White, yeah.
He would sometimes play himself into shape, but I thought for a big guy, he moved really well, you know. So who knows? I don't know whether he can or not, but I really have trust and faith in our staff that they'll have him in as good a shape as he can be in starting the season. And because we're going to need some size in there. We are going to need some size. We're going to need some hole pluggers for sure.
There's no doubt about that. All right. Answering a couple of other questions here. Burnt Orange Horn says, a rogue boy is a Texas-type player who wants to win for Texas. That is who Sarkisian wants, not mere bag shoppers. Appreciate that. Yeah, you're right about that. Sark wants guys that want – I always say there are two types of Texas players, guys that come to play at Texas and guys that come to play for Texas. You want the latter. You want guys that come to play for Texas. It's like that old JFK quote, right? Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. Yeah. The for Texas guys, they want to know what they can do for their university. What can I do for the program? Leave it better than I found it kind of guys. At Texas guys, they want to know the South by Southwest. Hey, where my NIL deals at? How many can I get? Can I get some ACL tickets? They want to know what Texas can do for them. Nothing wrong with that, but the four Texas guys, trust me, you'll be a better program with four Texas guys in your program instead of the at Texas guys. There's a difference. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, when I talked to Quinn this week at the Manning Passing Academy, I asked him, I said, hey, like, I know that you've taken a step up in leadership. You know, we've talked about it with Calvin Banks. You know, Jake Majors is another. Who are some guys that are kind of underappreciated when it comes to their leadership in this room? The first name he mentioned was Baron Sorrell. He said, yeah, that's a guy who, you know, day in, day out comes in, puts his heart, you know, head down and just gets to work. And I think there's a couple of guys right now that you can point to and say, that's exactly what they do. Calvin Banks is one of them. We've talked about it. He's not a big vocal guy, but, you know, with coming in with that five-star tag on him and kind of still living up and exceeding expectations with his first and second year in Austin, I think 100%. Baron Sorrell, Ethan Burke to an extent, Kelvin Banks. I mean, these guys are so important to that chemistry and that kind of understanding for the newcomers of what it takes to come in and say, all right, I know that everything big and shiny at Texas is great and it's extra, but at the end of the day, we're here for one thing, and that's to play football. So those two being singled out by Quinn was really encouraging for me, because we do know, of course, the elder statesman in the room is Drake Majors. And at this point in his career, he's not going to let anything fly under the radar. So that's really encouraging on that front.
It's good stuff, CJ. Nice nuggets there. All right, let's get some more of these questions. Alan wants to know first of all, Alan might be joking here. Hey, Coach, is Jordan and Jackson your sons? Yeah.
I've never had a DNA test.
He raised them, though, so there he is. All right.
Well, the joke is, I always tell people, I've been called a lot of things. Fast was never one of them. So
where they get the speed from?
Yeah, they're mamas. You know, my dad was a running back at SMU back with Doak Walker.
And, man, that's what they got.
Kyle Rote. And so anyway, he had some typical Shipley knee injuries, you know, and I had ACL. My daughter had ACLs, a college basketball player. My dad had ACL. Jordan had two ACLs. Jackson's the only one that missed it. But they're my boys, as far as I know.
That is crazy. The ACL thing is crazy. That is wild. That's pretty wild. That's definitely more than a coincidence right there. Good genes. Good genes. All right. But Alan also wants to know, is this the month for recruiting momentum, CJ? Recruiting momentum in this month? Do you get that in July?
Yeah, I think so. This is always the kind of the area of the recruiting cycle that we expected a number of decisions to come. Obviously, the next 2 weeks are going to be jam-packed with recruitments coming up. And I'll have a big article tomorrow on Texas football when it comes to what's expected. Of course, Marco Jones tomorrow. I'll go over a few. Cade Phillips anywhere in the next 3 to 4 days. Nick Townsend, July 10th. DeCorian Moore later in August. But, hey, Dalen McCutcheon and Riley Pettijohn each announced that they'll be deciding in the next 2 weeks. So Texas is going to have either a very successful month of July, or we're going to be continuing a little bit more of that rut of June. Right now, I tend to think that there's going to be more good news coming for the Longhorns in the next 2 weeks.
All right, good stuff there. Hey, Mama Vogel. Hey, how about this? Mama Vogel, one love to OCL from Jamaica. Tuned in to Reed's comments. The reggae music on this boom screws is too loud to listen. Hook up. So Mama Vogel is on a booze cruise right now, CJ?
It must have just started with the way that sentence was still typed out, you know, correctly. So I hope they're having fun. They're down there to celebrate the 4th of July with some friends. So I'm glad they're having some fun and enjoying or escaping the Texas heat a little bit.
Mama Vogel's on the live.
Well, watch out for that hurricane.
Hey, yeah. There you go.
It's going to hit them, Coach.
And I'm not talking about the drink either.
I was talking about the drink. I just had a hurricane this past weekend. I love me some hurricanes. All right. There you go. Thank you, Mama Vogel. Glad to have Mama Vogel on the live stream. It's always a great pick-me-up. How about this one from Anish? If we don't land Townsend or Edwards at the tight end position, is Keyote Armstrong someone we circle back to as a flip candidate? CJ.
Yep. That would have to be the guy that Texas circles back to right now. I don't see Texas going 0-2 with Edwards or Townsend. Of course, Townsend commits July 10th. Caleb Edwards, I think, leans more towards it being, believe it or not, an Auburn or Alabama battle, despite being from the West Coast. So that's where I lean with him. I think Texas is in a good spot, strong spot right now for Nick Townsend. Of course, I saw him last Thursday for a workout on my way down to Louisiana. So decision coming. He spoke highly about his time on campus. Texas pitch being, you know, kind of a faster Jatavion Sanders to him. And we watched collectively here, I believe last week, what he can do you know, physically wise, you know, with that physicality, he'll take some heads off when it comes to either side of the ball. So I think he's a really talented player. And if he's that guy for you to pair up with Emory Winston in this class, that's a strong two tight end class.
What's Edwards' first name?
Caleb Edwards.
Caleb, okay, I need to go watch him. I don't know if I've watched him. I've watched Nick Townsend, and I like what I see. So I can't make a decision on which one I prefer, but Nick Townsend's a monster.
Yeah. And, he's a baller.
Yeah, he's a freak, a special kind of freak. All right, thank you for that, Anish. We appreciate it. Thank you for your contributions and participation. All right, how about this from RW? Any inkling, CJ, on who's next? And the other shoot, the next, you know, pin to drop, if you will, domino to fall in this recruiting class?
Yeah, I mean, of course, just kind of following the decision dates that we got. Marco Jones is tomorrow. USC is kind of involved. Texas A&M made a big jump. Michigan and Texas were perceived to be the two favorites. You go down the list, Zion Williams, I believe, is still in favor of LSU at the moment. Cade Phillips is the next on the list when it comes to who's making decision in the month of July. I still believe Texas is the team to beat there. So if you're looking for a definitive answer, we'll have to wait until he announces. But right now, all sights are set on Cade Phillips, potentially.
I like the young man, Cade Phillips. I actually got a chance to coach him at one of the camps where I was a guest coach. He's got some good football character. I can vouch for that. There's no question. All right. There you go. Let's thank our sponsor one more time. We are very grateful that South Point Dodge is a part of the Orange Texas football family. So, hey, Texas football fans, you can score an easy extra point this season when you get to the point at South Point Dodge. South Point Dodge has over 600 vehicles in stock, including a great selection of Ram 1500s, 2500s, and 3500s. Whatever your truck needs, South Point Dodge is the one-stop shop. So, score big today at South Point Dodge. Also, remember, folks, you can get a great deal at South Point Dodge, Austin's automotive everything. Right now, you can shop over 50 Ram 2500s, all marked down with huge savings. That's right. So you can score big today and save big today at South Point Dodge. You can go visit them today off of I-35 in South Austin, or go online to see all of their great automobiles and their selection at southpointdodge.com. That's southpointdodge.com. Get to the point at South Point Dodge, Austin's automotive everything. Thank you very much to South Point Dodge for sponsoring the winning drive. All right, gentlemen, before we get out of here, I got a couple of things that I want to bring up here because I saw this actually come across my timeline. So Greg Sankey was already asked about and the horns down, and he said, I won't be answering questions about football penalties on July 1st. Somebody wanted to ask him about the horns down. They're traumatized from their time in the Big 12. I'm surprised. I'm glad he just, you know, he's obviously he's not going to answer questions about penalties. But we don't expect that to be a penalty in the SEC, right? This is not going to be something where if a player does it on the field, they're going to be penalized like they did in the Big 12. It just became a way bigger issue than it needed to be. We expect this to die in terms of being penalized. We expect that to die as an issue.
It needs to die. That's just part of the game.
Exactly. Yeah, matter of fact, coach, you know what? I don't remember a lot of horns down in my face. You want to know why? I was too busy winning games and kicking their ass. You kick their ass, they don't put the horns down as much. Trust me. You don't see it as much. Now, you're going to see in the SEC just because they're obnoxious, but trust me, you win more. They don't put it up as much. They tend to holster that thing a little bit more.
So yeah, it's always funny that
it doesn't matter who's playing. You could see Illinois and Indiana playing on TV, and there's going to be somebody doing orange down. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen.
I love it.
It's also very funny that anytime horns down is brought back up, it never originates out of Austin, right?
No. I can tell you, being on staff there for 4 or 5 years, I never heard one player ever say anything about horns down bothering them one bit. It probably fires them up more than anything. That's all I heard.
Yeah, I agree with that. As, like I said, I'm mad that it's not in the video game. I think it should be in the video game, and I think people should be able to do the horns down. Let them do the horns down. Let them eat cake. It's fine. It's great marketing for us. I love it. It's beautiful.
I'm a proponent for football. I mean, it's a game of passion. You got to have intensity. With that, as a result, comes a little bit of taunting and that chirping. I think football is at its best when those emotions run, you know, almost to the line of teetering overboard. And so if whether or not you call it taunting or not, I love it. I think there needs to be more taunting in college football. Bring back horns down, bring back the gator chomp and the slice the neck, you know, whatever.
We got an A&M bucket that we put Bebo's manure in. I mean, where do you draw the line? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think anybody from A&M is worried too much about Bebo's manure going in an Aggie bucket, but
yeah, no, I'm with you. I saw that come across the timeline. I wanted to share. Okay, here it is. Last subject here before we get out. I want to get you guys' thoughts about this. So Open Doors is a company that tracks NIL transactions around the country, different directives, different collectives around the country. And they've been doing it since really the genesis of NIL. So they probably have more data on NIL across the country than any other company. And so they put out their projections, basically put out their annual like study. They put out their annual projections and they put out their annual like results from, you know, what they have collected, the data they've collected from these different collectives. And so based on their data and their info, their NIL market projections, they claim that Power Four schools have an average basically NIL budget of $13.9 million. Like overall, but that's for all sports, allocated for all sports, but they claim it's around $13.9 million. They say group of five is at 3.4, and they claim that Division One is around 1.2 million.
That's remarkable.
That is pretty remarkable.
A lot of money.
I got this from Ross Dellinger, by the way. So I'll give him credit. He's the one that pulled it up.
Okay, we're going to cue the Rod was born too early.
No, I like to. Yeah, trust me. I was definitely born too damn early. Father Time is undefeated. But no, I just think it's interesting to keep up with really kind of how the NIL market continues to grow and evolve and year by year. And he says here that the collegiate NIL marketplace is projected to eclipse $2 billion in tandem with athlete revenue sharing. And the average Power Four conference collective is expected to eclipse the $13 million mark. So I apologize. That was the projection, was the $13 million mark.
Great time to be a college football player.
Yes. So that's saying.
Coach, you got another kid on the way?
I had my kids too early, too. I should have been one of them kids at 80 going to the graduation. Yeah, but you're making that NIL money.
You got grandkids, though. Hey, you got some grandkids, though.
It's too so, long. Yeah. I can't wait that long.
Yeah. That's all right, Coach. They can pump it into Shipley Ranch and right cut. There you go.
Yeah, I guess so. That.
But yeah, they basically say when the new financial framework hits and revenue sharing hits, you're talking about a $2 billion NIL market in major college sports. And that's just only going to continue to balloon and grow as well. All right. Thank you guys for all of your participation. We really appreciate it. Thank you once again to our sponsors, South Point Dodge. We appreciate them sponsoring the winning drive. Thank you to Matthew behind the scenes. He is the real MVP, folks. We cannot make it happen without him. Tomorrow you have Coffee and Football starting at 8 o'clock right here on the On Texas Football channel. And then tomorrow we'll have our live stream at 7:10, around 7:10, 7:15 tomorrow. We'll have the live stream on Tuesday, so you want to stick around for that. Also, my man CJ is working hard. You got some great stuff over on your Twitter at CJVogel_OTF, but also you're working on some stuff for the website as well, right, CJ?
Yeah, tomorrow we'll have a full-fledged kind of look at what decision dates are coming in the next 2 weeks. We'll also have the recruiting breakdown. Jerry and I kind of sitting back, previewing not only those, but what's to come further down the line for the Texas Longhorns when it comes to filling out this 2025 class as well. So, and of course, Blake Monroe's done a tremendous job covering this Texas baseball kind of frenzy out of the portal, the high school world as well. So all the good nuggets on OnTexasFootball.com.
Great stuff there. Also, remember, you can become an OTFOG. It is worth it because of the great work by Blake Monroe, CJ, and the crew. So if you want to become an OTFOG, you can join them at OnTexasFootball.com. They're running a great special over there, $20 off annual subscription to the site if you use the code OTFOG. That's OTFOG for $20 off. So instead of the $60 a year, it's like $39.95. Or you can get the monthly subscription for $5.95. So go check that out on TexasFootball.com. All right. Thank you very much for you guys, for all your participation. Thank you for joining us. For Matthew behind the scenes, for Coach Bob Shipley, for my man CJ Vogel, and for our sponsor, South Point Dodge and the On Texas Football family. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Same time, same channel. Hook 'em horns.